Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click of Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are for May 2009. We're going to be talking about the sales of the top 300 comics through Diamond to retailers. And, you know, it's funny. I've been reading on the internet, Chris, a couple of places that have categorized, and this is more on the comic side than the trade, but they include it too, on how May the market just crashed.
Yeah, I was reading up on that too.
And this is after the huge rebound we had last month. And the previous month, I mean, comics were down but not out. And, I mean, I don't want to pick on Heidi over at The Beat. That's a great site. It's very informative. It's one I try to check every day. But the irony is, and she's not the only one who said comics crashed. ICV2 has kind of mentioned it for May. I think John Jackson Miller did also.
Mm-hmm.
And they're comparing May 2008 to May 2009. And, you know, again, they were mainly talking on the comic side. We're mainly going to talk on the trade side. So a little different kettle of fish there. But, you know, when I looked at the numbers for May on the comic side, they were actually stronger than the March numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I've got the data in front of me. I should look on this for the trade side too, shouldn't I? Actually, this month is a little below where March was, certainly below where April was, but it's really not that bad of a month. You know, this is, I was going to say one of the stronger months for the trades, but that's a little misleading in so much as the data I've got reflects the totality of the units on the list every month. Gosh, that sounds like an apples to apples comparison. Mm-hmm. Well, up until the fact you remember that prior to, what was it, October last year, instead of 300, we only had 100 items. Go back even further, the list goes down to 50 and stuff like that. So it's really a little bit of an apples to oranges comparison.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, we do benchmarking here. We look at trends, and every industry does, and that's just how the business works. But I think you're right. I mean, that's the one thing I noticed right off the bat is, and I knew you were going to bring this up, about the 300 list. We did not have the 300 in the trades. Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. But if you want to talk about, you know, how the industry's doing, I really think, and I've said this many times before, no doubt we'll say it many times again, that comparing month-to-month numbers is really misleading. Definitely on the comic side. I would argue much more so on the trade side. On the comic side, some comics ship every month, some ships two or three times in a month, none the next. On the trade side, we have a fairly different smattering of trades and hardcovers every month. Now, sure, we're going to have, like, the Vertigo stuff that shows up pretty much each and every month to some degree as a quasi-stabilizing influence, but that's a small portion of the big picture here. And, like, the top item this month, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I mean, we don't see that property showing up on the list that often. And when you figure it weighed in this month with, let's see, that's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 3.
Century, Volume 1, 1910. You're right.
It did 36,545 units. That's big. And on the trade side, that's really big. That equates to pretty much the sales of the next 7 items on the list. And if you work your way up from the bottom, it really is the equivalent of somewhere around 75 items. So really, it comes down to what comes out in a given month versus what comes out in another month if it's really the least bit of a fruitful exercise to compare them.
Right. It's, you know, this is also one of those books where it could be construed as a comic book and not a trade.
I was going to ask you about that. How big is this thing? How many pages?
I think it's about 64 pages or so. Maybe less.
At 64 pages? Come on.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the solicitation text now, and it does not say. But I'm sorry. If it's 80 pages or below, I really don't consider it a trade in any way, shape, or form. You know, it's a stretch when they would toss some of the Walt Disney stuff on here and things like that. But, I mean, if you're going to do that, if you're going to toss a 48 or 64 or even 80-page kind of a thing, how come those Archie digests aren't showing up on this list?
Exactly. Right. We've talked about that many times before. You know, what is a comic? What's a trade paperback?
Yeah. I mean, it's a nebulous term and one that I think different people use the term slightly differently whenever they're talking about it. Which, you know, hey, not a big deal, but worth pointing out. Now, going to the breakdown real quick, because we kind of jumped over that, and usually we kind of start with that. Really interesting split. Normally we've got kind of a rough three-way split. This time, however, it's almost kind of a four-way split. DC took 26.12% of the total units for the top 300 trades. Marvel, 22.98%, so just shy of 23% of the total units. And then the next two, if you take Dark Horse, which had 11.62%, and Top Shelf, which had 9.62%, that gives us about another 21% right there. And then everybody else is filling in that last quarter. It's good to see some of these other publishers really starting to have a market share, a market presence. And frankly, I'm really impressed with Dark Horse. They did that 11.62% with only a total of 23 items, 9 of which were reorder, compared to, you know, the 70 items that Marvel had and the 86 items that DC had. So with a quarter of the number of items, they did about half the number of units sold.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's going to be, you know, by and large, more profitable for them.
They've always tended to be better off. I mean, I've said this before. I think you've disagreed with me before, but I think a lot of their books sell better in trade, you know, with Buffy and all the Kirkman properties and everything.
Well, the Kirkman properties is Image.
Or, I'm sorry, Image. What am I thinking? The Hellboy. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. And we've had a few of those on here.
Yeah. I don't think I've disagreed with you on that. I've always kind of thought that Dark Horse is one of the publishers that's got kind of a more even footing, because if you look at the total dollars they're getting from comics this month, a little under $630,000, and compare that to the number of dollars they're getting on the trade side through the direct market, which is a little under $769,000, that's really kind of on par. I mean, it's not a 50-50 split. If anything, it's a little trade heavy.
Right.
But that kind of ratio is really kind of unusual. You know, typically it's, with most publishers, very heavy on the comic side, you know, to the 70 or 80% kind of mark. You know, Image, I think, is doing pretty well this month also, with about 58, 59% of their income, you know, between the trades and the comics coming from the trades. If we're getting to a point where the market's moving towards a trade-based economy, and with sales continuing to drop on the comic side, to me it's inevitable that sooner or later that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The publishers that have a better footing on the trade side are going to be the ones that are able to compete better should they have to shift over to relying more on the mass market outlets of Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, those kinds of stores. Now, hopefully it's a long way off. I like my local comic shops. I like my online comic shops. I like them much better than bookstores. But, you know, the market's going to do what the market's going to do.
You want to go over your major and minor and your farm team stuff?
Sure.
Over that? That's always fun to go over. We haven't really touched on those in a while, so.
Okay. For new listeners, I've basically broken the publishers into 5 arbitrary groups. What I consider the major league, which is the premier publishers of Dark Horse, DC, Image, and Marvel, a strong case could be made that Dark Horse and Image should get bumped down to the next level, which is the minor league, which currently I've got Boom, Dynamite, IDW, and Oni. I've got a ton of publishers in what I'm calling the farm leagues, which is the smaller publishers. Some of these have been around for a long time, some of them not so much. You'll find in this area Radical, Red 5, Bongo, Aspen, Avatar, Cartoon Books, Antarctic Press, Abstract Studios, ton of publishers. Really, the majority of publishers, particularly those you'll see in the back half of previews, are going to be in this league. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with this. These are the people who are really, I'm going to argue, to a degree, a lot more passionate about their work because they're closer to the work and the audience. I then also break out manga publishers, Del Rey Manga, Random House, Tokyo Pop, Viz, and Yen Press, because I think manga, while it is trade paperback in size, is comic book in sales trends, if that makes sense. And then the fifth category is Archie, because, well, Archie lives in a world of his own. And really, it's one that on the mass market, particularly on the digest, is doing just gangbusters compared to how it does in the direct market.
Right.
So it's operating on a completely different business model, different set of rules, everything.
One thing that you have in the Farm League that I've noticed that there are three companies with the combined dollars that are over $100,000, and that's Aspen, Avatar, and Top Shelf coming in at over $290,000. A strong case can be made for those to move up to the minor leagues in a way.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And these are just the arbitrary things I've put them at when I first kicked them over here.
Right.
You know, if anyone can come up with a good set of guidelines as to what would qualify, you know, publishers for these different categories, or if there are other categories, hey, I'm game for playing with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think the rules at the DC and Marvel level, where you're talking millions to tens of millions of dollars in sales, versus, you know, the hundreds of thousands versus the tens of thousands.
Right.
You know, things just work differently. You can advertise differently or can't advertise, depending as the case may be, and just the level of resources you've got, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, in this I've broken out how much they've earned on comics in dollars, trades in dollars, and I'm using dollars because that's more equivalent than units.
Right.
It's completely unfair to equate one comic book of 22 pages of story to, say, you know, an omnibus.
Right.
I've got the combined dollars, and then I break out the percentages between the comics, the trades.
Right.
So there are a couple of publishers that, you know, are making all their money this month off comics. Boom, Dynamite, Aspen and Avatar fall into that category. And you're right, when you consider the fact they've got over $100,000 worth of income at full cover price, the fact they're doing that strictly on just comics with no trades is very interesting.
Well, look at Top Shelf. They did more combined dollars than Boom Studios.
And they did all of that with trades.
Yeah.
So bigger ticket items, etc. But Top Shelf tends to be more trade heavy just in general on their output.
True. And Top Shelf did have Alan Moore's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen this month, too.
And so, let's see, that accounted for out of that.
Yeah, what was the percentage of that? And that was an 80-page book, by the way.
80 pages. You see, I personally would have put that over on the comic side.
Mm-hmm. Well, the 80-page giants that JLA do every year or whatever, they get on the comic side, so.
Okay, do you want to know roughly what percentage of Top Shelf's income that the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was?
Yes.
Roughly 100%. It's the only item they have on the list.
Is it really their only item they have on the list?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
I scrolled over to column AU where I've got the extended income, which is the cover price times the number of units, and it's like $290,000+. And I'm like, okay, let me filter by publisher. Bam, only item. So that is kind of funny.
That is very funny.
But, I mean, that shows what a single strong release can do for a publisher, particularly on the trade side, but I think it's also true on the comic side.
Right.
You know, and particularly in this case, one that just shoots way the hell past everything else on the list. Now, so far, the only number we've given our listeners, Chris, is this number for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen of 36,545 estimated units. Now, there's not often a chance for me to say, you know, you know, 30x thousand on this list, or even 20x thousand on this list. I mean, the numbers just don't get that high. The next highest item we've got in slot two is the fourth volume of Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8. This is the Time of Your Life trade paperback. It did very well, and normally this probably would have been the top list. Certainly over the last few months it would have been. It did 8,581 units. Now, I could say 8,581, but, you know, it's one where typically on this list we're dealing in hundreds, not thousands. And you look at that difference between that, you know, 8,500 and that 36,500. There's just a huge difference there. Now, you know, over time, the Buffy stuff's probably going to sell a couple of more units, whatever, but, I mean, frankly, I kind of expect we're going to see the League showing up on the list for some reorder activity going forward.
Oh, yeah.
Now, interesting thing this month, those top two items, only two items on this list to crack 5,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is worrisome, in so much as, you know, we used to have a number of items that would do that every month or whatever. I think people may either be getting burnt out on trades or don't have the discretionary income to be spending on the trades. But there's only another four items that got above 4,000 estimated units this month. You know, by the time we drop to rank 15, we're below 3,000 units. By the time we hit rank 40, we're below 2,000 units. When people think that trade paperbacks have this infinite shelf life and they're just selling copy after copy after copy, maybe not quickly, but consistently or whatever, that's not really happening. You know, the other thing that's really unusual this month compared to the last year or two, you notice what's not at the top of this list? There's no Watchmen.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
Now, if you scroll all the way down to rank 277, we've got 464 units of the International Edition of Watchmen. But the list bottoms out at 427 units, and Watchmen didn't make the list at all this month. Now, I take that to mean that with the really smart consignment program that DC set up, where at essentially no cost and no risk to the retailer, they could get as many copies as they want, these retailers still have copies to sell. So I don't think we've necessarily even, you know, saturated the demand for Watchmen, but certainly I think as of May, we've saturated the retailer's demand for Watchmen.
Yes.
Which, you know, I think DC should be complimented on.
Mm-hmm.
They have apparently gotten as many copies of that into the direct market as the direct market could possibly take. And what more can you ask for? I mean, as a publisher, you've gotten your book as deep into the marketplace as you can, and then it's just a question of, you know, do people pick up copies or not? And with a time-tested property like Watchmen, I gotta figure the level of returns they're gonna get at the end of the consignment program, not gonna be too bad. Okay, jumping around just a little bit. At rank 6 from IDW, we've got Star Trek Countdown. I know we talked about this a little last month.
Mm-hmm.
We got over 4,000 units of reorder activity, 4,002. And basically this, you know, like we were talking about last time, of people not realizing it tied into the movie, I think some people finally did. So I think this is good sales for the property. Certainly I'd like to see it do better. And I suspect in the mass market, it may have done pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we touched on that exact theme that nobody really knew much about it. And that was me, really, you know, and since then, you know, I've picked it up, and I like it a lot. It was a nice read.
Nice read, and fits well with the movie.
It did. And now they're going to do, I understand IDW is going to do another prequel, as it is, and do Star Trek Nero.
They're doing Star Trek Nero, and they're also doing a Spock Reflections.
Oh, that's right, Spock Reflections. That's right. And is that a one-shot?
I think it's a mini-series, actually.
Oh, okay. Oh, that'll be cool.
Because I'm thinking I saw a second issue solicited for that, but I could be wrong. Okay. they're doing some good stuff with the Star Trek property, and hopefully it'll start to get some traction with the success of the movie.
Yeah, and they're doing it very carefully, I think, you know, doing one book at a time, one series at a time, and, you know, unlike what they're doing with G.I. Joe or Transformers.
You haven't been looking at the IDW solicitations very carefully then, have you? I mean, I don't want to disagree with you, but I'm currently getting Star Trek Crew, Star Trek Mission End.
No, what I mean is this new reboot.
Oh,
Star
got it.
Trek,
okay.
So with the new reboot. The J.J. Abrams universe.
Fair enough.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
I mean, to me, Star Trek is Star Trek is Star Trek, regardless of which generation or timeline you're in.
No, it true. But if they want this to be long-lasting and not just be kind of a, an Elseworlds-type tale that they'll reboot in another 10 years, you know, if this is the status quo for Star Trek now and everything else, they can, you know, now they can play around with anything else.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they want to make another movie and then down the road, if they make another TV series, will it be the J.J. Abrams series or will it be the original or Next Generation series?
I think creatively they've got to stick with the Abrams stuff.
I think, well, that's why I'm saying that they should go slow and at a steady pace.
I'm curious what direction the novelizations are going to take, or the novels, I should say.
Yeah, have any of those come out yet?
I really haven't been to a bookstore lately to check. Because at one point I was getting all the Star Trek novels, and at one point I was current on them. Now, this was 15-plus years ago before, you know, there were a couple of different franchises. I mean, this was when it was the original series in Next Generation, maybe the beginning of Deep Space Nine, certainly before Voyager, Enterprise, New Frontier, and half a dozen of the other franchises in the novels they started.
Yeah, and then they did those mini-series at the Round Table or whatever it was, Captain's Table, and all those little mini-series.
Well, those kind of event books are what drove me out of the Star Trek novels.
Yeah.
Because I'd be going on a trip, and I'd take a half a dozen novels, and if they're all the same meta story or whatever, the same story arc, and I don't like it, that's a bad trip for me to be going on with only that to read.
The only one did you ever read the Khan series, the prequel, that when he was in ruling India or wherever he was, and he and Gary Seven crossed paths?
No, I didn't read
it. It sounded like a really cool trilogy because it tied all the Star Trek time travel stuff together.
Oh, it does sound good.
That sounds, yeah.
But, you know, I'm curious what direction the novels are going to take and if they're going to run with the new continuity. And if they do, and if IDW does as well, that they could really kind of get an extended canon, if you will, out there. And that could be fun. That could be good.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
See what else we got in here that looks interesting. Now, at rank 12, we've got the first volume of the Trinity series in trade paperback, with 3,224 units, so on average, maybe a copy or a little more per store. Not great, not bad, but not, you know, overwhelmingly impressive either. But really, you know, any further we go on the list, that's going to be true for pretty much everything. You know, we're already at the point where, you know, most stores, if any store ordered two, some other store didn't get one at all. And, you know, when I say that again, I've said this before, I'll say it again, that's not a bad thing. You know, I know one of the local stores here in town, I think the owner was saying that they're not stocking all the trades. And I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't. If you don't think you can sell it, don't put it in your store. It's eating up rack space, it's eating up capital, and it's just a bad idea.
Well, I think any store across the country can say something like that. I mean, you can say that for regular monthly comic books. I mean, I go into comic book stores and there's just back issue after back issue after back issue, you know, behind the current issue. And it's just not selling. And a lot of that was Trinity, because I remember I was picking up Trinity. I think it was Trinity or Countdown. And I went up to Detroit Comics and I was getting it at the time, but I was just picking it up off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think around week 12 or week 13 came in, and you know, I didn't have a pull list because I get most of my comics through DCBS. And for some reason, I was just picking it up just to pick it up. And if I didn't like it, I would stop reading it kind of thing. And I remember going to the comic book store and it wasn't there. And I asked the owner, I'm like, where is it this month? He's like, yeah, I stopped ordering. And I'm like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, it just wasn't selling. I'm like, oh, okay. So.
And that's the smart move.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I mean, in an ideal world, a store would have their supply exactly meet their demand, whatever that may wind up being. Mm-hmm. Now, on the trade side, that's a little trickier because there's this theory of, ooh, the infinite shelf life, which, again, I think is a major myth. Because with some of these things, I really don't think there's a huge demand to begin with, much less any ongoing demand. Go down to rank 78. We've got New Exiles, Volume 4, Away We Go, which I'm pretty sure is the final trade for that series. Mm-hmm. It did 1,372 units, which is actually up about 9% over the previous volume. But series is over. They've rebooted it to just Exiles. And at this point, I'd say every other or maybe every third store got a copy on average. And is there that much demand for it, you know? I don't think there's that much initial demand. I certainly don't think 10 years from now somebody's going to be saying, oh, wow, I've got to get that fourth volume of New Exiles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of this is flash-in-the-pan type stuff versus those that have that kind of month-in, month-out demand. You know, your Sandmans, your Walking Deads, your Fables, things of that nature. You know, which really comes down to, I think, you know, Walking Dead, Vertigo, and not much else, which is too bad.
Hey, can I talk about something?
Sure.
Real quick? At rank 82, Ben Temple Smith's Dracula. Do you know exactly what this is?
I am under the impression that this is the Dracula novel with Ben Temple Smith doing essentially chapter illustrations.
You got it. That's all it is. It is a prose novel with his artwork, like 20, 30, 40 pieces of art maybe. And that's about it. So again, we come back to what should be on the list and what should not be on the list. And this should not be on the list at all.
You're thinking it should be on the book list?
I think it should be it's a book. It is a prose novel book with his illustrations.
Fair enough. I would not have any objection to that.
Yep. Nothing against IDW. I mean, and I looked it up. I mean, I picked it up and I looked at it. It's a gorgeous book. And I even said on my podcast, if you've never read Dracula, you know, and you don't own a copy, hey, this is a perfect one to get, really.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want to read the novel Dracula, not just get, you know, I know that Dynamite's redoing Dracula and Marvel's done their Dracula, you know, in comic book form. But if you've never read the novel, this might be a good one to get.
Well, and I think it's cool that IDW is coming out with these books, adding the chapter illustrations, getting them out in front of a new generation, a new audience, whatever. But you're right, you know, it's a book.
Yeah, it's not even a graphic novel.
Yeah. So it did well, that's great, but should it have been on this list? Probably not. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, for me, typically this is stuff that is either original or collected sequential art storytelling.
Right, exactly.
Now, the one exception that I would make that I think doesn't fit that definition but does belong on this list is at rank 92 with the Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe A to Z Volume 8 Premier Hardcover.
Right.
And it did, let's see, 1,257 units, which is down by over half compared to the previous volume, which did 2,651 units. So I'm hoping this is a matter of this volume having shipped on the last week of the month and some of it falling into the next month's numbers. Because otherwise, a drop of over half, that's not good, no matter how you look at it.
Or people just aren't pre-ordering it and figure that they can find it at a convention this summer. Because, I mean, that's a lot of money to be spending, $25 on this book. And I've seen them at half-off sales.
No, I see what you're saying, but, I mean,
again, this is pre-order. I know. It's all pre-order stuff.
Well, exactly. The people who are going to have it at that 50% off down the line are buying it now.
Buying it.
These are those numbers.
But what I'm saying is there's no extra people buying it. You know what I mean? That's kind of what – there's no incentive for me to pre-order it when I know that the comic book dealer at the convention that I'm going to next week or whatever may have a copy waiting for me.
Well, I'm going to challenge you on that in so much as, and this also goes back to the store having all these back copies on the rack and stuff, because up until about a month ago, I was between jobs, so I had stopped getting a lot of titles. Now, over the last couple of weeks, I've been working really hard on trying to catch up on those so we can actually, you know, expand what we talk about in the weekly comic spotlight for Bob and I, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And Bob's stand was very much like you. Oh, stores are going to have tons of copies. You can get it out of a 50-cent bin or at half off or whatever. And in some marketplaces, I think that's true. Certainly Southern California, where Bob is, definitely true. You know, maybe over in your neck of the woods in Detroit, that's true. Maybe in Chicago or New York or certain other areas. Now, where I'm at in Austin, Texas, we have four, maybe five stores that qualify as comic book stores. Mm-hmm. There are one or two others that carry comics, but I really don't think are what you would consider your average store that has new comics, trades, etc. Out of these, two of them have back issues. Out of these, when I was looking for a couple of recent issues of Uncanny X-Men and Invincible Iron Man, which are, you know, decent sellers, I had a hard time finding them. So even if something's at the top of the list, that doesn't mean it's going to be everywhere. And every time you're able to get a comic, or worse yet, a trade paperback or graphic novel at a 50% off sale somewhere, most retailers are paying about that to get it in their store to begin with. That means they're selling it at cost, give or take. You know, maybe they're taking a loss, maybe they're making 10% on it. Depends how big of a store, their discount, all that kind of thing. But it's not a highly profitable item, and, you know, if they're doing that too often, that's going to kill them. When I look at these numbers, and we're still within the top 100 here, and everything I'm seeing in front of me is, you know, 1,200 units, 1,200 units, 1,400 units, whatever. These are low numbers.
Right.
Some of these are reorders. Most of these are not. What would be the X-Men Worlds Apart hardcover, 1,245 units. If you want a copy and you see a copy, you might want to pick it up.
Yeah.
There's not that many floating around in the system. You know, when I look at Incredible Hercules Love and War, the trade paperback, 1,365 units. Sure, this may stay in print. Sure, it may even have enough reorder activity that once Diamond runs out of whatever supply they have, that they might even cut another order to Marvel. Mm-hmm. Now, Marvel being a premier publisher isn't under the same restrictions as other publishers with the order threshold and all that. But, you know, if people are thinking, well, you know, I can always just pick this up at any time, I really think that in this economy, with retailers ordering as tight as they are and definitely should be, there's not that guarantee that the material is going to be out there.
Well, see, maybe you're right. When it came to, like, the official handbook volume 7, maybe retailers did order, you know, a few extra copies here and there to put on their shelves, but they're not selling. And so when it came to this volume 8, let's say they only ordered it to what people wanted on their pull list, and therefore the sales are down because they're only catering to the people that actually want the book and not buying extra copies.
I certainly think that's possible, but...
You kind of see where I'm going with that?
Yeah. No, I see where you're going.
Okay.
What I'm doing right now is skimming over the sales history for that if you go to column AE.
Yeah, well, it could be that book, it could be any book, you know.
I was trying to see if, particularly since this book shipped on the 27th of May, mm-hmm. it's possible that not all of Diamond's warehouses got their stuff in time to ship it out that week, and that some of it could have spilled over into the first week of June. Now, looking at the numbers for all the volumes I've got data for, which is all but volumes 3 and 5, volumes 2, 4, 6, and 8 are all in that, you know, 1,100 to 1,600 range.
Okay.
And really, that volume 7 is something of an anomaly, having sold surprisingly well. Like, twice what most of the other volumes are doing, other than the first. you know, again, I was trying to figure out, is this an artifact of shipping issues?
Well, you bring up a good question regarding shipping issues then, because if this title or any title that ships in the last week of May, and you say that some may spill over into June, does that come up on this sheet of yours as a new item or a reorder item?
That would come up in this month as a new item, next month as a reorder.
It would come up as a reorder. Okay.
At least that's my intent while I'm writing this thing.
Okay. Okay.
But again, the reorder column, as we've talked about before, is something I'm having to deduce based on, has this shown up on the list before? Did this originally ship in this month?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't have the shipping date it came in on. Sometimes it didn't show up on the list before as the title is right now. And I've got some ideas on how to clean up the title process, but Diamond manually massages this data each month, you know, so it's going to turn out a little differently sometimes. This is particularly true on the first volume of things that'll come out just as a whatever trade paperback, or maybe a whatever volume one trade paperback, and eventually becomes a whatever volume one subtitle trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
All of those text strings are different, therefore they don't match. And it's the data cleaning process on this, I think, is a hell of a lot harder than a lot of people who just look at the month-in, month-out numbers realize.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, not their problem, so that's fine. That's what I'm here for. It's the service I provide. It's worth talking a little further about, though, in so much as items that ship at the beginning of the month have an inherent advantage over those that ship at the end of the month. Even more so in a 5-week than a 4-week month like May was. Because they got that first week to sell. If the stores need to reorder more, they can even get those reorders in before the end of the month. Whereas, you know, items that ship on that last Wednesday, what comes in that last Wednesday is all that matters on the new initial numbers for the month. Anything else will show up as reorders.
You think publishing companies are aware of that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they are. They care about that.
I'm not saying they care about that, but I think they're aware of that.
Okay.
Do they use that to kind of game the system? Smart ones should.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been consulting on the side, you know, in my spare time and stuff, and giving some advice to the people behind the Mayhem comic and Image. And one of the things I told them, ship that puppy the first week of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that going to make a huge difference or whatever? Probably not. But frankly, you know, with the numbers I'm seeing every month, every little bit helps. There's no reason, if you're trying to maximize your sales potential and stuff like that, to not understand. I mean, it makes sense to understand how the system works and to leverage that as best you can. So, a lot of these items that shipped on the last week of the month, if they'd come out a couple of weeks earlier or 1 week later, their initial month sales might have been higher.
Because
really, it's initial month sales, not the initial number of units that went to the stores. There's advanced reorders included and actual reorders included, more so for items that shipped earlier in the month.
Mm.
Now, by rank 127, we drop below 1,000 units. Actually, rank 126 is exactly an estimated 1,000 units. A nice round number there. And, you know, it's good that we've got the top 300 so we can see, you know, further down in this list, see these that are selling slow and steady, see that at rank 166, the Civil War trade paperback moved another 773 units. You know, normally that would have fallen below the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's turning out to be, you know, something of a quasi-evergreen. You know, it's not showing up every month, but it's showing up with enough consistency to be impressive. You know, certainly much more so than the DC equivalents from back then of...
Oh, sure.
Infinite Crisis, 52 Countdown.
The Geoff Johns Green Lanterns trade paperbacks still show up, though, with No Fear and Rebirth and Sinestro Corps, and we'll probably have number of reorders on those three books again next month.
Yeah. Well, I think right now, with Blackest Night, they've got the buzz. They've got the I was going to say the marketing, but really the fan interest behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And if DC can leverage that and really kind of milk it for what it's worth and do so legitimately,
mm-hmm.
to you know, fan that interest and leverage it without abusing it and blatantly cashing in on it, it could be a really good summer for DC. And I would love for that to happen. You know, I think the guys over at DC are doing some really great comics on a number of areas. Certainly Jeff Johns, I think, is doing some brilliant writing. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about where the Green Lantern stuff is going. But, you know, I think they also, over at DC, don't get enough credit for some of the other stuff they're doing.
Right.
You know, that Trinity trade we were talking about earlier, that's the third consecutive weekly year-long title that came out on time. I mean, that's staggering.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that takes good, solid editorial direction, talented creators, and with Trinity, it's all the more impressive because, I mean, arguably, the production people and whatnot at DC were probably a bit burnt out from 52 and then Countdown.
Oh, yeah.
But then for Busick and Bagley to have been doing at least half of every issue, that's insane. You know, they really should be congratulated on that. Whether people like the story or not, personally, I really enjoyed it. But it came out each and every week. It was a reasonably consistent seller. Sure, it lost a little ground each issue, but frankly, that's really commonplace these days.
Mm-hmm.
And that series ended above 32,000 units. I don't think it ever dropped below there. That's more than most titles can say.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's something that they should be very proud of, and if they can have a good, strong summer based on what's happening in the Green Lantern stuff, I think that's great. I hope they do.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance. I read, like, the first 2 months of Trinity, and I just dropped it after that because I wanted to wait for it in trade, actually.
Are you picking up the trade?
I'm going to get the trade. I've decided, yeah, probably.
You've decided, yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably I am.
That's
yeah.
The part that gets me with the wait for the trade mentality.
Yeah.
And I have nothing against any reader that decides they want to get something either in the trade, the hardcover, the absolute, the omnibus. Buy whatever you want, whatever format you want as a reader, and do it guilt-free. Okay, right. I want to say that up front. However, this goes back to that myth of the trades being this infinite shelf life of constant activity. When people wait for the trade, they've already decided they don't care enough about the monthly or the weekly to get it. Fine. Maybe they just like the packaging better. No problem with that. But then there's the case where some people decide not just to wait for the trade, but hey, it's come out. I don't need to get it right now. There's already no impetus to get it immediately because you've already been waiting so long. What's another couple of weeks that stretches into months, years, decades, what have you? Or, well, maybe I don't want the trade because, you know, they're probably going to do a hardcover. I'll wait for the hardcover. Do I want to get the hardcover? They may do an absolute or an omnibus.
That's what I'm doing. Well, you hit her in the head. That's what I did with Absolute, well, with Alex Ross's Justice.
Yeah.
I brought it, I mean, you know, and I'm like, you know, they're eventually going to get this in Absolute. And when did that start coming out? 2007? 2008?
2007, I think.
2007. I got the first issue, and I loved it. I thought it was great. And I'm like, but I'm just going to wait. And sure enough, later on this year, Absolute Justice is going to be out.
But in the meanwhile, you have not gotten all of the issues.
No.
You've decided not to get the trades, to not get the hardcovers. So now you've had three or four opportunities to buy this and are in the habit of not buying this property.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that seems like bad marketing, bad branding, bad selling. It's a bad habit to get your customers into.
Right.
And by coming out with everything in a collected edition, there is no incentive and no impetus for people to buy the monthly comics or the weekly comics as they come out when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this belief that these trades will be available forever, there's no incentive for people to even get the collected edition when they come out. So you've really kind of diffused the incentive to buy. You've and to me, that's why we're seeing low sales on both sides. This is something I've seen as a problem for years, and I'd be very curious to know exactly when publishers went from "we'll do a couple of trades" to pretty much everything they print in the monthly format will get collected. Mm-hmm. And then from there to it'll get collected pretty soon. And this is really more on Marvel. DC, I think, has a good policy of waiting a respectful amount of time before coming out with the collected edition.
Unlike Marvel, that just pumps it right out.
There have been times I think the collected edition and the final issue that's collected in there came out on the same day.
Oh, I think they, yeah, exactly. Look at the noir stuff. I mean, that stuff, you know, four issues and then the trade the next month.
It's
insane. My God. It's really insane.
Every time they do that, that makes somebody has got to be thinking, oh, well, I'll just wait for the trade or the hardcover, you know, whatever.
Well, that's, I thought that the noir stuff, and I think we touched on this, would be four issues, just throw it into a trade anyway and call it a 100-page graphic novel or whatever it would be, 120 pages.
They should have gone. Well, I mean, on the one hand, I want to say they should have gone straight to trade.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have. That would be
a, they should not have.
They should not have.
Okay.
And let me tell you why they should not have. And this goes back to why DC made the right choice to release World War III near the end of 52 as four issues that all arrived on the same day.
Right.
Because that way they could sell the four issues and then go package it as a trade and go sell that.
Yeah.
You know, it allows double dipping. And frankly, I mean, we're at the point where double dipping is not just commonplace, it's minimalist for them to just double dip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these days you've got triple dipping with the hardcover and the trade in addition to the monthly. On the Marvel side, they've really raised this to an art form on certain things like Secret Invasion, Civil War, etc. They've got the original comic, they've got the trade, they've got the hardcover. You know they're going to come out with a prestige format omnibus or glow-in-the-dark or whatever uber deluxe version. Plus, they've got the fifth version, which is a reprint Chronicles version in chronological order.
Yeah, that's what I'm picking up.
And it's like, how many different ways do you need to repackage this story? And hey, I don't care who gets it in what format or why. If they're happy, that's great.
You can't blame the consumer. You have to blame the company.
No, not at all.
Right. If they're going to present it in all those different forms, well, and I have a, you know, you just wait for it then. That's, you know, I'm still going to give Marvel my money.
You know, it's one of those things that there are some things where I think the readers need to be aware of the impact of their actions. Whether they choose to change their actions based on that, I leave up to them, and they should feel guilt-free on their decision. You know, if they want to get variant covers, personally, I think that's bad for the industry. I think it's foolish for publishers to be putting a variant cover on everything they produce.
Well, Marvel does it on their trades, too.
Yeah, but if it makes somebody happy to collect those...
More power to them.
More power to them, that's fine, but if that demographic that says, ooh, I want all these variant covers, goes away to any serious number, we're going to see some strong drops on the comic side. That's going to impact what's available to collect into trade, so we'll see some impact on the trade side. Because the two are linked at the hip to a certain degree. You know, that new Exiles Volume 4 is going to be the final volume because they stopped making new Exiles. Now, granted, they replaced it with another title, but there are other titles that once they stop, that's it, they're over, that end of story, literally. You know, there's a little bit of a lag factor between what's happening on the comic side and when it shows up, or if it shows up on the trade side. But I'm not seeing a lot of items on the trade side as original content, other than the manga, obviously. And even that is arguable because it's really a translation of Japanese material.
Mm-hmm.
I have a much broader coverage of what I read on the comic side than on the trade side, but if there are more than 30 items, if that many, on the list for the trades this month that are original to trade material. In other words, showed up originally here, I'd be shocked. You know, and that's, I think that's a bad sign for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, original to this format. That's great. That's also why it sold through the roof compared to everything else. The next item down on the list that I think is original in this format, in other words, isn't a reprint of something else somewhere. Man, I'm going down to like rank 40 and I'm not finding anything.
Well, Incognegro, maybe at 95.
I sit corrected. You are correct. This does qualify.
But still.
But that's down at rank 95. Is there anything above that that would qualify? I'm just seeing as the comic side gets weaker and weaker on individual issues. Sure, the aggregate numbers are sometimes okay. That until we start seeing more publishers experimenting and doing so successfully in the collected edition, such as Drumfish did when they did Sentinels as a direct-to-trade series, where they essentially took what would have been 8 issues with chapter breaks, covers, etc., and just said, hey, we'll publish it straight as a trade. And I thought that was a great move.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Empowered. DC's done it a couple of times with the Fables hardcover, with the Pride of Baghdad, and a few other things like that. But these are the exception rather than the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And since people already have a chance to have picked up this stuff in another format, or at least let other people pick it up and tell them if it's worth picking up, you know, it's part of why these sales are where they're at. You know, nobody's going to go really rush to pick up the MYX No Way Home premiere hardcover if they haven't heard great things about the miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one where word of mouth is, I think, backfiring on the publishers. But we've seen this before. We will see this again. There's no question about that. That's pretty much all I got at the moment.
That's cool. No, the only thing I wanted to bring up, this really kind of surprised me. Coming out at rank 253, the X-Men Inferno hardcover, $75. Estimated sales, 507. Boy, that is not a whole lot, John.
Yeah.
You know, and they did the X-Inferno sequel to it. They kind of really were hyping this up. And I, for 70, you know, it wasn't even called an omnibus. It was called a hardcover. And I kind of joked on my show that it should have been called an omnibus, really.
I really would not consider, and granted, it's been a while since I've read the Inferno storyline, I would not consider X-Inferno a sequel to this so much as a sequel to the Magic miniseries from the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But, I mean, Inferno was another one of these stories that was, what, back in the 90s?
Yeah.
And, I mean, do they need to really reprint every, you know, X-Men event storyline they did from that period?
Right.
Well, obviously they do, and they will. And this is one where publishers have already gotten, particularly Marvel and DC, to where everything they're currently coming out with quickly gets packaged up. They're slowly working their way back through their back catalog.
The big events, yeah.
And sooner or later, yeah, we're going to see, you know, Sonic Disruptors, or at least what was published of it, collected. And that's how, you know, bottom of the barrel they're going to get eventually.
Oh, yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that series, but if they didn't feel it was worth finishing at the time, are they ever going to feel it's worth collecting?
Well, and wait till they get, like, Atlantis Attacks or some other silly crossover. You know,
would there be anything wrong with them collecting Spanner's Galaxy, the 6-issue miniseries? Is there any need for them to do it? You know, but if they're reliant on sales of reprint material, and there comes a point where they've kind of, you know, milked what they can out of the current production getting automatically reprinted.
Mm-hmm.
They've got this back library, why not take advantage of it? I mean, it makes sense from a business point of view in the short term. It's already killed the back issue market from being a de facto part of every comic store to a very niche thing.
Mm-hmm.
it's gotten to where the trades are eating into the monthly sales. I think they're eating into their own sales. And it's a question of, you know, how many times can this snake eat its own tail?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. But, you know, something's got to change when these numbers continue to be, I'll go with unimpressive.
Right.
And it's these low numbers across the board, both on the trade side, the comics side, and how in a lot of cases the properties sell worse and worse from installment to installment. That's what I see as the big problem. Not that May of 2009 happened to be worse than May of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's really me talking on the comics side. Because it's on the trade side, things are actually up a little bit, I think, over from last year, if I'm looking at the right numbers. But total sales of the top 300, well, and obviously this is a top 300 compared to a top 100. So, of course it'll be up. You've got another 200 items.
Right.
You know, even if they only sell one copy, 200 items at a $20 average cover price or what have you, it adds up. But it's looking to be a very interesting year, 2009, for comics and trades, and we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you got coming up on your show?
What do I have coming up on my show? Well, if my site doesn't crash again this week, I will have up that I just put up. My latest show is the Exo Manowar hardcover from Valiant.
Cool, that's the original series, right?
Yeah, so I thought that was a really cool hardcover they did.
It was a great series.
Yeah, you know, I kind of said on the show, I'm clamoring for more. You know, they only brought out the three hardcovers of one with Archer and Armstrong, one with Harbinger, and Exo Manowar. And that's it. Like, have you heard anything else from Valiant at all?
Until you mentioned it, I hadn't even been thinking of them, and I'm disappointed with that because they had some really strong properties, and I'd like to see them come back.
Nothing. I mean, you go to their website, and their website has not been updated in, I think, many, many months. It's the same old thing.
That's disappointing. Maybe they'll have a booth at some of the conventions over the summer. Maybe they'll start making some moves.
Yeah, you know what? If you see them in San Diego, or if anybody sees them at HeroesCon, which is, well, this weekend, but any of the conventions, you know, talk to them and see what's going on, because I'd love to have more of those hardcovers.
I'd like to see them get back into comics.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't expect them to finish off Unity 2000 or whatever, but
no.
You know, I'm okay with that. They can start anew. I mean.
Right. Or even if they do more reprint material, you know, maybe they don't have found that there's not an audience for them, but, you know, I've got this first one, and I plan on getting the next two. I thought they were pretty neat.
Yeah, it was a great series.
Maybe they can do a complete Quantum and Woody book one of these days, too. That would be nice.
I think that one would sell pretty well, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, Augie, I know Augie was mentioning it on over at his blog about the whole series.
Yeah.
And that's only, what, 20 issues anyway? They could easily package that.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What about you, man? What's going on with you?
I'm trying to catch up on my reading.
You are trying to catch up on your reading, and I listened to you and Bob, and you talked about Batman number one, and you did not like the Flying Batmobile.
No, I did not.
Or Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin.
No.
Maybe it'll grow on me, but it just seems out of place for that title.
It caught me by surprise, too, that they would use something like that in a Bat title. Now, I mean, you can use it in the Bat universe, but in the Bat title, it seemed a little out of place. But Bob had a good point of, you know, Blue Beetle has got his flying car.
Oh, certainly the technology exists. I got no argument with that. And I'm not even going to say they didn't set it up well. But, and this is obviously a logical place for them to make those kinds of changes. Mm-hmm. But Batman had been such a grounded, realistic universe there in Gotham that to suddenly have these flying cars and stuff, it felt out of place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wonder why he hadn't had one previously. Maybe he just likes to drive.
he's got the bat plane. If he wants to hover, that's fine. Why does it got to be the Batmobile that flies?
Right, exactly.
You know, to me, that starts bordering into the sci-fi area.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that exists in the DC universe. I know that, you know, aliens are on that planet. I've seen them. I read the other books.
Right.
But it just felt out of place. And frankly, that version of Dick Grayson seemed a little out of step with the character that I'd been reading in Nightwing and Titans and all the other places. Not drastically so. Certainly, I don't think they violated continuity.
Yeah.
But it yeah, I thought it was a decent comic. I just didn't think it was a brilliant comic.
Mm-hmm. It'll be, yeah, I'm going to pick it up and see where they go with it. I think it has me more, I'm more interested in that one than any other title, I think.
I can see that.
Of the Bat title.
Now, on our next weekly spotlight, we're going to record, and I may get this up before it, I may not, I don't know. But we're going to be talking about Red Robin number one.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about, Uncanny X-Men 511. Of course, that means I've got to read Uncanny X-Men 506, 507, 508, 509, 510, 511, which is at least one story arc, possibly part of two. And then Unknown number two is the other one.
Unknown number two. Is that, who is that? Is that Lemire?
That's Boom.
Oh, it's Boom. Jeff Lemire's not doing it. No, he did the Nobody. That's what I was thinking of. Okay. Boom Studios.
I'm thinking it's Mark Waid.
Probably. Yeah.
I'm getting Unknown, Unwritten, and what was the other Un something or other?
Uncanny X-Men.
No. That one I can tell apart. But there were three that all came out in the same week with the first issue. Unknown, Unwritten, and Unthinkable.
Are they all from Boom?
Unwritten was by Vertigo. Really good.
Really? Okay.
I strongly recommend that. I've got the second issue. Haven't had time to read it.
Okay.
I haven't had time to read anything this week.
I'll be interested in see what your take is on Red Robin.
Yeah. Looking forward to reading it. Interesting. I like the Robin character, so it's a question of which one they picked, and they did a good job with it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Where is, what's his face? There's Tim Drake, there's Damian, there's,
Jason Todd.
Jason, where's Jason these days? Is he in, where is he?
I think he was kind of written out of the picture in Battle for the Cowl, wasn't he?
But he's, I swear I saw his name in the solicitations.
You may have.
He's not in Batman. No, Dick is going to be in Batman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, he took over the role.
Right, okay. But there's no backup feature featuring Jason Todd.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I haven't read the latest round of solicitations. I know a lot of people are already jumping on them.
Yeah.
But between still being in May for these sales figures, being in June for the weekly comic spotlight, still trying to finish that order, I'm not quite ready to. Well, actually, the orders for August or whatever, I'm not quite ready to leap to September and start worrying about those solicits just yet.
Right.
But soon. So I got that going. Really, we're probably going to go to, not go to, we've been at kind of a one episode a week thing other than the Mayo reports and the preview spotlights for a little bit. The commute on my new job is just eating up a lot of my time. And then with San Diego coming up, you know, I'm going to need a little time just to get ready for that and get to where I can edit the weekly spotlights on the road for that. And it's funny because the first one of those episodes that Bob and I will be recording face-to-face this year is going to be Weekly Comic Spotlight number 100.
Oh, very cool. Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah. We're given some passing thought to doing a back-issue spotlight featuring, you know, issue 100s.
Oh, that would be a very cool theme.
But we haven't come up with a list yet of what would be worthy of doing that with.
Right.
But, you know, it's something we're giving some thought to. We'll see if we have time to do it or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, as things get closer to San Diego and stuff, things get a little busy for me. And I'm way behind on my reading, obviously.
Right.
I got like 200 comics a week or two back. The shipment I got this week had a bunch of, obviously, new stuff and some older stuff. It was another 90 comics. So I've got most of a drawer box filled with things waiting to be read.
Hmm.
So, which is great, but I just need time to do it.
Oh, we all need more time, man.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Cool. Well, good show.
Yeah. All right, I think that wraps this up. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered the outside scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.